You guys have been working with the National Art School in Darlinghurst to put together this awesome celebration of poster art with a specific focus on 1970s Sydney. So what can we expect to see?
Well, an embarrassment of riches. So we have the NAS exhibition, which opened last night and goes through till the 12th of October. Over 200 works from the long 70s in Sydney. And I think there have been other poster exhibitions, but the thing that is particularly seminal about our exhibition and the festival itself is that it is an acknowledgement of the whole creative upheaval at the time. So it takes in the artists who armed themselves with squeegees and not guns, the musicians who screamed their message, and the cabaret performers who also made their mark. Johnny Allen was a huge part of that time.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And so many movements that we take for granted today really kicked off in the 70s. The whole environment movement, the women's movement, the gay movement, so many things. Independent music all trace their origins back to the 70s, which in a sense we're honouring with this exhibition and festival.
I mean, what we're doing is acknowledging the whole creative upheaval that happened at the time.
Absolutely. And thematically, the show seems to be engaging with heaps of various different forms of counterculture, as you say. So at that point in time in history, what kind of role did protest posters play in shaping things like activism and the arts, do you think?
They were right at the front of the barricades. The feminists and the anarchists were front and centre, first of all, at the barricades. They had the back of the gay community because the retribution and the punishment meted out by the status quo and the authorities back then was so threatening and so potentially, you could die at their hands. And so the women and the anarchists were the first at the barricades, and so they had the gay community's back. And then after that, there was this groundswell, and then came the Mardi Gras.
And the posters were the means of communication, yeah. The internet of the day, really. You didn't have the luxury of the internet to communicate. So those days, you stuck a poster up on the wall.
So what did those types of posters look like? People would plaster them on the streets, pretty
yes,
much.
And they were designed to communicate, so they had to be strong and instant. If you're walking past or driving past, you had the attention for 10 seconds. So the poster had just to bang, had to grab you. So that was the impetus with which they were designed, I think.
One of the most amazing things for me is that the issues that they engaged with are still as poignant today. So my favourite poster it's this beautiful magenta and it says, "Without trees we perish." So it's just extraordinary how current these posters and the issues that these brave people took on back in the 70s are as relevant now.
It's extraordinary and a bit depressing, really, to think that some of these issues are still big issues today. We were fighting them 40 years ago and we're still fighting them today.
And it seems super impressive as well that this is an archive of over 200 posters specifically focused from a very specific moment in time, which is innately activist driven. Could you talk a little bit about the curation process and how that worked in developing this show?
Yeah, it's been a great process. So we've galvanised many artists and worked together with some extraordinary people. So originally Toby had the idea and then he got me into trouble again. And Johnny Allen, he got him into trouble as well. And Eamon Darcy, who's the exhibition designer. And the curatorial process, well, we actually, because institutions take a long time to agree to borrow works. So there have been some absolute Galahads in this process. So Mark Ledbury from the Power Institute, who was the first to get it, John Valance, who heads up the State Library of New South Wales, Stephen Alderton, the National Art School. And then Toby, Johnny and I got in the car and most of the works came from artists themselves, although Eric Ridler at the Art Gallery of New South Wales opened his drawers and gave us some of the most beautiful things from the ephemera collection. So I had been part of an ephemera symposium at the University of Sydney and we were able to actually borrow works from that component of institutions, which is easier than borrowing artworks per se. And those things have actually been extraordinary additions to the exhibition. But the artist, it's all about the artist.
Isn't it a strange thing that something like poster arts, which is something that are traditionally meant to be on the streets, are then taken and adopted by institutions? It feels quite disjointed.
That's kind of funny that you say that, because there's this great bit of graffiti that appeared on Waters Gallery. Posters are meant for factory walls, not gallery walls.
Yeah, it's super strange to me. I find it fascinating. Like, the focus and the purpose of these posters is to galvanize it. It carries really strong messages, but it does seem a bit ironic at times.
They were never designed to be long-lasting. They were literally ephemera. And, you know, you stuck it up on the kitchen wall or whatever for a couple of days or a week, and then wrapped up the garbage and threw it out. So some of us are quite amazed to see that, you know, 40 years on, these are now regarded as art, and of course getting the sort of interest and prices that art does. But they were the genuine art of the time.
Is there a story behind the name of the show, Paper Tigers?
Yes, well, Paper Tigers, it's sort of a ironic name, because Paper Tigers was a sort of conservative phrase, and so we're using it sort of ironically. But Sedition, the actual name of the whole festival, has its roots in the student riots that happened in Paris in the late 60s, and then transferred to Camden in Britain, yeah, with Jamie Reid and all the little shenanigans they got up to.
And I like Paper Tigers because it does kind of undercut the seriousness a little bit. As Liz Bell says, it's ironic.
It's innately playful, which I think is a really great message to carry across
when
it's undercut with some heavier themes. So overall, what kind of conversations are you trying to open up with this show? What would you like audiences to leave thinking about?
Well, we have actually a series of conversations that are taking place. We want people to engage with the issues that were relevant then and still are today. But I think it's interesting, social media, it's wonderful, but you're sort of speaking, you're in an echo chamber. So we want to get people to actually start engaging with issues like town planning. Where are all the spaces that artists can operate from, because the developers have taken them all over? So we want to engage with those issues. It's amazing to me as a feminist that we're still talking about issues that relate to the colonization of women's bodies.
And I think also the notion that art inspires and creates action. I think one of the things that, you know, we're in a time where there's a right-wing ascendancy around the world, so I think it's a very good time to, if you like, gather the forces of progressive thinking, get across to younger people that there is a tradition here which goes back not just to the 70s but goes way back, and that they are part of a wider and a greater tradition. And I think that all comes out loud and clear in the exhibition.